really noticeable when you do a children's talk and then you come and stand up a few minutes later and a third of the congregation is now no longer here. That doesn't happen in every church that I visit. You're really blessed. And whatever you're doing to support your children and your young people, keep doing it, because it's incredible to see so many in church. I love that reading that Pauline read for us. When we read through the Gospels, often the stories that stand out are kind of the big ticket items. You know, Jesus feeding the 5,000, Jesus walking on water, Jesus calming the storm. And of course, we've just been through the mystery and the wonder of Christmas and the Christmas story. And we're rapidly approaching Easter and the profound impact that Easter has. So there's some really big stories. But here we have a story of Jesus having a conversation with a woman. Someone he didn't know, we don't know her name, in the middle of nowhere. It was such an obscure place that John describes it only as some area. In this congregation, in this conversation, this supposedly chance meeting, we get a glimpse into the Jesus that cares not only for the big things, but for the tiny details, for the intricacies, for the individual lives of people, their physical lives, their emotional lives, their relationships, and their spiritual lives. He cares for the whole person, not just for a specific part. John chapter 4 opens with Jesus travelling from Judea to Galilee, and there he passes through Samaria, a region most Jewish people would not go through. There were centuries and centuries of hostilities between Jews and Samaritans. So Jesus, his decision to go through Samaria is intentional. He's not just passing through geographically, he's crossing cultural and religious and social boundaries. As I said earlier, it's about noon, it's really, really hot. And he arrives at the town of Sychar. Tired from the journey, he sits down to rest. The disciples have gone to buy some food. And into the scene comes the Samaritan woman. Her presence here at this hour speaks volumes. Women would have typically collected water either very early in the morning or later in the evening as a group together. So this woman's solitary appearance at a really unpleasant time of the day suggests that she was excluded. She may have been avoiding others, perhaps to avoid shame or judgment. And it's here, in the heat of the day, that Jesus speaks to her. Will you give me a drink? Will you give me a drink? It's a simple question, but a shocking one as well. Jesus is breaking through the social norms, the religious taboos, and the gender boundaries. It's a radical grace of Jesus that he's connecting with somebody who would have expected only to be rejected. The woman is understandably a little bit surprised. How can you ask me for a drink, she says. John adds a helpful note to his readers. Jews do not normally associate with Samaritans. But Jesus is not bound by such divisions, and he says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that is speaking to you, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. So Jesus has moved the conversation on a little bit from the physical to the more spiritual. He's speaking of a thirst, a deeper thirst, a thirst of the soul. The woman, understandably, is struggling to keep up. She doesn't quite follow. She notes that Jesus doesn't have a bucket. And so how is he going to get this water? Jesus responds, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give will be in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. The conversation moves on. Jesus firmly but gently changes the subject. Go, call your husband and come back. I have no husband, she replies. And then Jesus reveals how he knows her completely. You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. It's a moment of exposure, but it's also a moment of compassion. Jesus is not shaming her. He's naming the reality with which she lives, but without condemning her. He brings the hidden into the light, not to judge, but to heal. The woman recognizes that there's something going on. Sir, I can see that you are a prophet. She shifts the topic to worship, a theological question that perhaps is trying to shift on from the personal spotlight. So Jesus doesn't dismiss her question. Instead, he speaks profoundly. A time is coming where you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship him in spirit and in truth. He opens the door to a new understanding of God, not confined to place or ritual, but to present with all who seek him sincerely. And then Jesus does something he hadn't actually done before in the Gospel of John. For the first time, he identifies himself explicitly as the Messiah. He doesn't do this to a big crowd. He doesn't do it in the temple. He doesn't do it to a Jewish audience, even though he's a Jew. He doesn't do it in front of all the temple leaders. He doesn't do it in front of his disciples. For the first time, Jesus reveals himself as the Messiah to a Samaritan woman with a painful past. It's grace upon grace that Jesus is showing that he cares for the whole person, the individual person. And that grace extends to everybody and anyone. And the Gospels tell that story, but it also extends to each of us. It also extends to each of us today. So let me ask you this. Where is the place where Jesus can meet you? Where is your well? Where are the places in your life that maybe feel dry and ordinary and hidden or even painful? The places where on the 25th of January, the January resolutions, the New Year resolutions already seem a long time ago. Where are those places? Because Jesus doesn't come with judgment or condemnation. He comes with living water, and he comes with truth and grace and love. And he comes to offer healing where there's been hurt. Freedom where there's been shame, and purpose where there's been confusion. Jesus met one woman at one well, but through her, a whole community was changed. If you go on to read the rest of the story, and that could be true of us too, and when we allow God into the depths of our lives. So his invitation this morning is to come and to drink deeply and to let his living water fill you once again. And so, just as Jesus cared about every aspect of that woman's life, he also cares about the people that come to in hope for help. So, over 2,000 years later, last September, a lady came to one of our food bank outlets. Like the woman at the well, this was a lady who faced challenges. She struggled with alcohol for many years. Sometimes she managed it really well, and everything was fine. And then at other times, something would happen, and she would struggle. She probably spent more money on alcohol than she wanted to the point where she couldn't always provide for her son, who lived with her. That September morning, she came into the food bank. Her son had just started college, having completed his GCSEs the previous summer, and she shared more about her story and his story with Beth, one of our financial inclusion facilitators. Her son had some sort of undiagnosed learning difficulties, but was really, really good at being creative, doing creative things, and he had started a media course at college. Except On the first day of college, he'd run into a problem. The college had expected him to have access to a computer at home, and he didn't have one. Initially, he hadn't told his mum because he knew she wouldn't be able to do anything, she didn't have the money. But eventually, a few days into the course, he broke down in tears and told her. And she contacted the college to see if there's anything that they could do. And as she did, she said that not only did she not have money for the laptop, she also didn't have money for food or clothes or for heating with the winter coming. The college were one of 300 referrers to the food bank. So they made the referral. And so here she was, talking to Beth. And the first thing that Beth did was to make her a cup of tea and have a biscuit. They sat on the sofa together in the hall, just two mums talking together. One of the things that people tell us about our food banks, about not just our food banks, is that actually it's not just about the food, even though that's really important. They tell us for the first time in ages they've been able to talk to somebody about the challenges that they face. It's often a release for them to be able to come and talk to another human being. And for those in that moment, for the lady and for Beth, two mums having a talk together about the challenges, it felt like a real human connection. And after a while, the subject moved onto the food, the type of food that the lady needed, the family needed, were there any dietary needs? Was there anything that her son wouldn't eat? What was his favourite food? If they had anything, they could have done something. And Beth completed a form, handed it over to a volunteer who went away to prepare the food box. And then the conversation continued a little bit. And she asked, Beth knew that there were grants available for people experiencing hardship. So she asked the lady if she would like help to try and find a grant for the laptop. And the discussion went on. Beth got a few details. The lady ended up collecting a food parcel and went away feeling a little bit lighter, just having had a chance to talk to somebody. And then Beth got to work, completed the form, and then a couple of weeks later, contacted the lady to say she'd been successful in the grant application, she'd been awarded the funding, and the son could have a laptop to continue his course. So obviously, the lady and the son were both delighted, but the story doesn't stop there. The lady went on to join In Hope's Life Course, a course that takes place over several weeks, which is about helping people rebuild their lives after addiction. And at the course, she made some friends. She grew in confidence. She was able to reflect a little bit on herself and the things that she was doing and the challenges that she faced. Crucially, how she managed her alcohol use. And meanwhile, her son was thriving at college, not only doing really well on the course, but also securing a part-time job where he could use his skills. I share that story because it's just one story that shows the illustration that actually hopefully reflects what we saw with the women at the well, that it's about connecting with different people and supporting different aspects of their lives, not just the need for food, although that's important, not just the need for connection, but that's important, but helping families to grow and thrive, which we see through our food bank. There's some leaflets and our impact report at the back, which are on the table, and there's, I think, probably enough for everybody. Please take them. They kind of give a little bit more depth to the work that we do, to the different stories, the different ways in which we help people. Last year, we moved as a charity from having services that focused on particular venues. So we had a women's night shelter, a homelessness day centre, a load of food bank outlets, and a life recovery course. And they kind of operated a bit separately, and we restructured to bring those together to enable more stories like the one I just shared to help people in different ways. Essentially, our work is split into four areas. One is around practical provision, so hot food, food parcels, places where people can have a shower, access to a washing machine so they can do their laundry if they're homeless, and places where people can get sleeping bags or coats that are both waterproof and warm at the same time. So we provide provision. We offer places of shelter, primarily to overnight night shelters, our women's night shelter, Spring of Hope, which is open all year round, and the Bristol Church shelter, which is open throughout the winter, providing beds and support and help for people who need overnight accommodation rather than sleeping on the streets. Client Pathways is it's a bit of a nebulous area, but it's about all those different journeys that people take, whether that's around financial inclusion, the story I shared with Beth, or whether it's about helping people to learn life skills, or whether it's just a simple thing like helping people to arrange haircuts, or a bit more creative. Every so often we have a choir where people can join for a set period of time and they spend some time just joining together and singing and doing something joyful, rather than just coming for help. So the pathway stuff does that. And then we have a housing project. We have 5 houses at the moment, hoping to grow. But 5 houses which are providing, each have 3 bedrooms, so places where people can move on from homelessness, move on and begin to rebuild their lives. So provision, shelter, different pathways, and housing, providing help. And through all of those, creating opportunities for people to encounter Jesus, whether that's through chaplaincy, whether that's through prayer, whether that's through just having that conversation that can move on from the, as Jesus did, hopefully, probably not as good as he did, but similar, that move from practical to physical to emotional to relationships to spiritual, and connecting people and helping people explore faith. We can't do this, in fact we don't do this alone, we do this with God, but we do that with support from churches across the greater Bristol area. And we are so grateful and thankful for our partnership with Rington. I think this is the 3rd time I've been here, but every time people have been really interested, and we do this with your support and your prayers. There are volunteering opportunities if people want to volunteer that they can do, but we do that together, and it's very, very much a Christian approach, a Christian organisation. There are lots of charities in Bristol that have Christian heritage and origins, but over time still keep to that but aren't overtly Christian. I think In Hope is one of the unique ones in that it is overtly still a Christian charity in Bristol. And we worked in partnership with all the others as well. In the last year, I'm going to give some stats, but actually behind every single stat, there is however many individual stories as well. So last year we served 22,554 hot meals in our day centre, the Wild Goose, hot meals to individuals who would otherwise have had nowhere permanent to eat and to sleep. They might be staying without a roof. So hot meals that make a huge difference to helping people get through the day, particularly on days and times like this where it's cold and wet. 111 women were given somewhere safe to stay at Spring of Hope, our night shelter. Each one, someone's mother or daughter or sister. 7,334 people were fed by emergency food parcels given out through food banks. And then 10 tenants, soon to be fit. Of the 5 houses, 2 are new this February. So last year we had 10 tenants based in Hope Into Action homes, each given somewhere to live and supported by a church and an empowerment worker. So thank you for your support and helping that stuff to happen through your prayers, through your financial donations. And please do take leaflets. They're free to take. They give you a little bit more information. They've got our website and our social media details on there, so you can follow us. You can find out more throughout the year. You don't just need me to come to your services, but you're welcome to find out all year round. For now, I want to finish with a prayer that reflects a little bit on the passages that we heard. Loving God, thank you that you meet us just as we are. Thank you that your grace breaks down barriers and invites us into new life. We bring to you the parts of our lives that we've kept hidden. Would you fill them with your living water? Teach us to worship you in spirit and in truth. And like the women at the well, may we leave changed and ready to share your love with others. In Jesus' name, amen.